Nice one. G'day, Scotty. I know it's only been sort of, 12 hours since I saw you last?
Indeed.
But I still miss you.
Thank you.
How's the head? I know you were coming down with a mini migraine after I spoke to you last. Is it recovering?
It is. I've done the sensible thing. I've cried myself this morning and I spent an hour in the H-bot. So hopefully I'm charged.
Just to clarify, that's cryoed, as in cryotherapy. You didn't just cry yourself, as in tears coming down your face.
No, I spent 3 minutes at minus 150 degrees.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's much more therapeutic for you than having a good power 3 minute cry.
See, some people would say that crying was quite therapeutic, and you know, the biopsychosocial model doesn't really
Absolutely.
Work for me.
Yeah, there's the psycho part of the bio.
Yeah,
you could cry away. Yeah. Well, today we wanted to talk all about breathing and snoring and all fun things. But before we get into that, I thought, let's do the preamble. I'm speaking with Scotty Wustenberg from Optimal Life, and I'm Eric Hansen. I thought that might need some reminders that there are two people to this fucking podcast. Oh, yeah, by the way, everyone, there's going to be frequent swearing in this today's podcast. I've had a long weekend, and my inability to inhibit swear words is rapidly running out.
Yeah. And
anyway,
do you want to explain why you thought you should?
Yes, in depth. So, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry, I totally forgot your name, and I'll make sure I remember it next time I feel like swearing at you on a podcast. But so Scotty and I were at what?
Tom.
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 Ah, Tom. He looks like a Tom. So Scotty and I were at a seminar over the weekend, and part of what had to happen at that seminar is we got our clothes off and recorded how we moved with our clothes. Yeah, sounds more exciting than it actually was.
You make it sound so much more interesting.
Yeah, long story short, a colleague of ours came up to Scotty, and he's a fellow lovely guy. I've seen him at several seminars before, and we've always had a good chat. But he goes to Scotty, "Hey, Scott, when are you going to interview Eric on one of your podcasts?"
I just killed myself at that moment.
Oh, you were so happy with this. Like, there are, I mean, I know you do most of the explaining and I just do the occasional little and agree or rephrase things.
But you're awesome at setting me up.
Eric Hansen is part of this podcast. It was quite funny. So several motherfuckers later, we all met. But yeah, Tom was sort of abashed about it, which was kind of, yes, there are two of us. It's not just the Scottish.
The part that's really funny for me about it is it took me a few moments to actually realize that I actually got recognized in person for my voice.
Oh, man,
my
I'm
voice.
Still shocked that people actually listen to this.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of started this just as an excuse to speak to you more often. I didn't actually think of anyone was going to listen. Who would have thought? I mean, we're up to, I'll have to double check, but last time I checked, it was about 2,000 downloads for these things.
That's awesome.
Someone, well, hopefully they're smarter for having listened to us and not dumber.
I think one way or the other, they're generally more entertained because, like, that's as much as anything, giving people information in an entertaining fashion. And let's
Fingers
face it.
Crossed.
Information is always down to the bias of the people giving it out and, of course, the people taking it in. So if you can't find a way to get it palatable for people, let's face it, doesn't matter what happens.
That's very true. Maybe we can view this as the comical reiteration of the dry research that's out there.
Oh, gosh, some of it's dull.
Yeah,
I think my favourite one currently is the paper that Darling Brett had us look at that was on all of the damage and ultrasounding of the nerves. And basically, you know, the uptake of that particular paper was, don't let medical imaging people stick needles in you.
Yeah, that seems like a valid valid concern.
Yeah, it was awful. Yeah. I got through about half of it.
Let's contextualize that for people.
Yeah,
was it that was in the space? So, commonly medical people inject you into like joint spaces is the one, or bursas that responds favorably. But you've got to remember there is a network of little tiny nerves that gets in the way of that needle. So if you happen to poke a cutaneous nerve on the way into feet, it's a null the inflammation in the bursa or what have you. There is a fair chance that you're going to make the pain worse rather than better.
Sort of not what we're aiming for invariably in these moments.
No.
But I'm going through that particular paper and everything's exactly the same thing. Evidence shows that it was the person sticking the needle in that caused the problem. And it went through every nerve. I'm like, oh, this is too dull. I can't actually face it. Sorry, Brett, I did try.
Yeah, well, Brady, I'll make sure we tag him in this so he realizes that we sort of listened to him, just not as much as we would like.
Yeah, but it was an interesting week.
On to the matter at hand.
Yep.
So, we slept together.
Yeah.
Over the weekend.
I enjoyed. I sent Minty Fresh an updated screenshot of the spooning incident.
That's right. So my associate stayed in the same place that we did, and he seems to be a late riser. So I stayed professional because I'm his boss, but Scotty sort of jumped on and spooned him, which was adorable. But
he took a long while to wake up from it.
He did.
He did.
I think he was probably just, it feels right, and just went back to sleep.
Oh, that's cuddly.
Mm.
However, it does kind of bring us to some of that point. So he's waking slowly in the morning, which tells us that his sleep cycle and his breathing and the quality of the sleep that he's doing is not working all that particularly well for him. I think that's kind of a pertinent point because lots of people really aren't actually getting all that much quality out of their sleep, and there's a variety of reasons for that. Stress is going to be a factor, but like in his instance, after chatting with him, and I'm sure he won't really mind me saying this, he doesn't like rising early. His body finds that a bit of a struggle. And so ideally, human beings are meant to be waking up with the sun, getting up kind of at that moment to go hunt and gather and find things to do for the day. And so we're not really meant to be particularly, up at 11 o'clock at night because, traditionally we didn't have a damn electric light bulb to solve that problem. So as much as we can bless Thomas Edison for the inventions or, Nikola Tesla, depending on kind of who you want to talk about at that moment in time and which conspiracy theory you want to run with, they were an absolute blessing, but at the same time, they've actually created a whole lot of havoc for people because the electric light bulb allows us to actually upset our diurnal rhythms and our serotonin to melatonin conversion. And the significant amount of blue light, especially as we've gone on to have those LED lights, which are kind of energy efficient, but emit a very interesting electromagnetic field and have a much more bright white light. White light is your up light. It's your vigilance light. It's doing something and being aware of things. And when that's going on at 10 o'clock at night, your brain is not slowing down to sleep, is it?
No.
No.
Be aware of your light sources, people.
So that's going to, of course, drive a whole lot of cortisol into your system and cause you to not sleep deeply. And so what will that do to all of your muscles?
Well, they're not going to repair for sure.
No, they're going to stay quite tight, quite vigilant, and your system's going to stay very, very active. Now, stressed systems alter people's breathing. So there's a whole bunch of stuff to that. But the more cortisol hitting your system and adrenaline hitting your system, the more shortness of your breathing cycle you have. Now, if you do that all night, you have that whole short tightening of the neck, and you release a lot of lactic acid into your system. How do you think you're going to feel when you wake up in the morning?
Well, pretty fatigued. Could have a maybe that's a possible secondary cause or a primary cause for, you know, waking up with neck pain. Don't blame the pillow, people. Could be the stress.
Yeah, it's actually vastly more likely to be the stress and how you're breathing and breathing with your mouth open, not breathing through your nose. I think those things are really, really pertinent points. Most of the time, most people's pillows are basically fine. I mean, you know, we probably had, I don't know, a few millennia without pillows being invented in the first place, and we still survived.
Do you want to – I know we've talked about this in the past, but do you want to comment briefly on the effects of being a mouth breather overnight and the bacterial overgrowth that starts to happen around your
oral
mucosa?
So mouth breathing is particularly bad for most things, and there's a bunch of stuff that goes into why we're mouth breathers. Some of it can be structural. Some of it, like, you know, a massively deviated septum might make it very hard for you to breathe through one nostril or otherwise. You could have a whole lot of allergy or a sinus infection that's repetitive because of it. And so what we have is a much bigger orifice. So you open that bigger orifice because you can't get it, the air sucking through due to narrowing of the airways for whatever reason. Now, as you breathe in through the mouth, what occurs, the mouth is a wet orifice, right? And that saliva, which is the wetness, is particularly prone to being dried out by the airflow going across it. As you dry out your saliva, your mouth becomes more acidic. And so, of course, this creates a variety of interesting things. To start with, it actually attacks your dental enamel quite effectively, regardless of what else you're doing. So you brush your teeth at night, you've got lovely, squeaky, clean teeth, and you still attack your teeth all night because you go and sucking air through your mouth at that moment in time. Now, the more acidic your mouth becomes, the more alteration to the quorum of bacteria in your mouth. So what most people won't know, especially in this very over-dramatized world of information that's all talking about the gut quorum and the gut-brain connections and bacteria in the gut, but you've got an entire colony that's meant to be commensal to your nose, mouth, and the back of your throat. And so when you feed it the wrong things, lots of sugar, lots of stress, and mouth breathing, you alter the colony so it becomes very lactic acid-producing bacteria. So any bacteria that live there tend to live in a more acidic environment, and they tend to operate down around 4 and 5, you know, not up around the 6s to 7s that we really want the mouth pH to be sitting at. Now, what that does is it starts an inappropriateness of digestion, because if you alter the pH in the mouth and make it more, and I'll use the technical term,
it's a good one.
We set off inappropriate ability to digest the food, because the saliva is the first signal that the brain kind of uses to say, oh, I'm really excited about this food going in my mouth. Let's release lots of saliva. We salivate. We release chemicals to tell the gut to get the acid going. So if you don't have really good quality saliva in the mouth, you, of course, don't trigger that cycle to tell the gut to digest the food, and everything really becomes blah. Yeah. It's that intermediateness of you're not really alkaline, you're not really acid, you're this kind of blah space in between that really isn't doing any job properly. But what it does in the mouth is it tends to select for bacteria such as strep. And those forms of strep tend to be the ones that cause ear, nose, throat infections. And in little kids, it can cause dental cavities, and they continue to alter the pH. Now, there's good research evidence to show that some of these bacteria, such as strep and staph, that can live there, are also the ones that colonize further down in the bowel, and they also drive, by the release of very specific endotoxins, alterations of behavior that make the human being hunt for high-carbohydrate-type foods.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting?
That's cheeky.
So the more you mouth breathe,
well, I was quite amused by your speaking over the top of you. I was quite amused by your solution to this problem. which was to tape your mouth shut before you go to sleep.
Works well.
I thought, you know, Scotty, he's a lovely guy, a bit weird, but, you know, whatever floats your boat. But run me through the science behind taping your mouth shut.
Okay. So just for instance, this isn't like duct taping anyone's mouth shut or otherwise. There's no ball gag going on here, so
ah, damn it. When I was thinking in my head how I was going to say that, I was going to say, so yeah, you brought out a ball gag yesterday. Damn it, I forgot. Shit. So yeah, oh well.
Okay.
Next time.
So yeah. So the basic idea, again, if we shut the mouth, full stop, and hold it closed, we don't breathe through the bigger orifice. So there's some very simple anatomy and physiology going on. If your mouth is open, you start breathing through your mouth, not through your nose. Okay, so think of it in a basic way. You start walking, you then move into a run. As you start the beginning of the run, you're breathing through your nose, can keep enough oxygen supplied. As that run becomes a bit more intense, you start panting a bit more, which means that you start opening the mouth and sucking in a greater volume of oxygen through the mouth. Now, when you're exercising hard is the only moment that you should be breathing through your mouth. So you'll hear lots of wonderful yogis. I mean, there are other reasons. If you're consciously trying to do it, you know, I'm going to breathe through my mouth. You know, there's some reasons. And there are devices that you can do to do that with, such as the power breathe. But they're kind of different to standard breathing. Now, otherwise, what you're meant to be doing is breathing only through the small orifices of your nose, because you're actually trying to maintain a air pressure range in the lung so that you're not having to suck against the collapsed lung and activate significantly more musculature. Because when you start having to suck against a collapsed lung because you breathed out all of your carbon dioxide level, and everyone kind of is thinking about oxygen at this moment, breathing, as much as anything to be working well, is about maintaining a higher level of carbon dioxide in the lung and therefore in the bloodstream to gas exchange with. Because what everyone forgets is that gas exchange means that the oxygen coming in has to exchange seats with carbon dioxide. Otherwise, there is no release of oxygen, and the actual red cell becomes really sticky and won't release the oxygen because the pH range of the bloodstream becomes wrong. Okay? So the carbon dioxide actually makes that possible. And this is where the really funny thing, you hear people, and I got asked at dinner on Friday night by our laser guru who was there. He's looking at my my bottle of sparkling mineral water there. He goes, isn't that going to make you very acidic? Won't it make your blood acidic? This would be bad for you. I'm like, well, have a think on it. To start with, sodium bicarbonate is technically an alkali, right? And that's what we utilize to carbonate kind of our drinks. That's how they manufacture it, to compress it into there. But what we're saying is that we're utilizing, so for someone who's talking all the time, you're going to lose a lot of carbon dioxide. So you actually have to get that replaced. Now, partially we do it through respiration, but the more I'm talking at this moment, the more outward breath I have, the more I'm burning off my carbon dioxide. It's blowing it out. So I have to respire quicker internally to generate more, or I can consume, you know, sodium bicarbonate, whichever form, to actually bring the balance back in my bloodstream so I can keep exchanging so that my brain stays oxygenated. Now, when
you tape your
mouth shut, of course, you stop the ability to burn off or blow out that carbon dioxide so quickly, and you have a longer time with the respiratory cycle. So it's, you can dump so much more air so much more quickly with your mouth open compared to... So try it. Try breathing out forcefully through your mouth. Come on, do it. Try it through your nose then.
Now, much longer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Simple experiment, but it goes to prove, and I'm trying to get people to understand, that you get about three times the length of outward exhalation through your nose than you do through your mouth. So you then collapse all the carbon dioxide out of the mouth, which means that you are slightly less than you were because there's very low levels of carbon dioxide in the air. Now, this kind of gets really quite interesting when we start hearing about the climate change stuff, because we go, oh, this is bad. Well, we might actually require more carbon dioxide than we think. And that's not to say that it's not heating things up or otherwise, but there is a low level of carbon dioxide recognized from the respiratory physicians out there in the world. So the air does not have lots of carbon dioxide. The body requires quite a lot of carbon dioxide. That's why
we
traditionally cured panic attacks and asthma attacks by breathing into a brown paper bag, because it built up the reserve of carbon dioxide in the exhaled air, and that means you start to exchange oxygen with the carbon dioxide effectively, because as you breathe it back in, there's more carbon dioxide there, and it calms the system down. So my simple solution to it, and I actually import mouth tape specifically from the States, which is designed for it hypoallergenic, is to tape my lips shut at night to stop me being able to open my mouth, because, you know, as a child, we tend to have nice springy muscles. As a 44-year-old, our muscles and liver can become a bit more lax, so it's much more mechanically easy. Hey,
Scott, you're still looking good, Scotty.
Oh, thank you.
Still
looking
good. You're welcome, bro.
You become more inclined, as slackness occurs in those muscles and tissues, to open your mouth. Now, the other thing that you'll see at the same time, question.
Well, the one thing that I was going to that I was interested about. So both you and I have overactive inflammatory systems, and a little bit of gluten or dairy sends us off. So classically, for me, I struggle to breathe through my nose. Partly because I've got a deviated as fuck septum from being kicked in the head one too many times during karate, or landing on my face one too many times from horse riding.
Yeah.
Either way, nose doesn't work that well. Plus inflammation, my nostrils tend to clog up. But you were suggesting, because you're pretty much in the same boat, that taping the mouth shut, although it doesn't feel good at the start, but the forcing yourself to breathe through the nose was going to effectively dry out that over-inflamed nostrils, so that you could. So, you know, I'd imagine there'd be some people saying, "Well, I couldn't take my mouth shut because then I'll suffocate and die." Whereas the realistically, what's going to happen is that you won't die.
That's correct.
You'll just start breathing through your nose as it dries out, and those super clogged up sinuses will naturally sort themselves out.
That's exactly
it. Is that about right?
Yep, absolutely.
Ah, beautiful. See, it's not just the Scotty show. Yeah. Eric listens every now and then and can pop in an answer.
Yeah. So what the novelty factors with it is that, as I did the first time, so I am not giving new information. I got given this information from dental, oral and sleep study courses that I did a decade or so ago. And I was trying to actually solve my daughter's bad dentition. She was, you know, 5 years of age, and basically her teeth were rotting in her head. Now, my daughter, again, high-functioning autism, had a lot of mouth breathing. She had a lot of inflammation. Her entire system was built around that. And, of course, all the saliva was drying out in her mouth, as it turns out. So the very first night I do this, I come home. You know, a bit petrified and not showing this. My wife is just freaking out. You're going to kill her. She'll suffocate. That general kind of concept. And so we put her to bed, taped her mouth shut. We convinced her to do this. She went off to sleep like a little lamb. And, you know, we're both standing in the kitchen about, you know, 10 feet away down the hall. And you hear this because we're a bit over-vigilant at this moment in time. First child. Like her breathing's becoming difficult and she's choking a bit. So I sprint down the hallway, open the door to watch her languidly peel off the mouth tape with her eyes closed, drop it on the floor, the arm flops down, and she goes back into a deep state of sleep again. So your brain has the capacity to wake you up when you're under threat. You've got entire nervous system structures built around that. So her system dealt with the threat quite effectively. And occasionally, I found myself waking up in the morning with tape stuck to a cheek or an arm or something. Because obviously, the degree of irritation, inflammation, or I might have had it at the beginning of a cold and I've just assumed it's a bit of food irritation and it's actually something a bit more, you'll just peel it off. So there is zero danger to this unless, you know, someone actually tries to choke you in the night and blames the mouth tag. Now, I mean, if you're choosing to eat kind of the wrong thing and your wife kind of accidentally starts putting a pillow over you, that's not the mouth tag, dude. So I raise it simply because there isn't the danger. It's a perceived danger because it doesn't feel comfortable to start with. And everyone's seen far too many inappropriate films where someone sticks duct tape. I did have a patient, though, who I explained the sort of tape. Like, as I said, we import and patients can buy from us specifically cut hypoallergenic tape that's designed for this in the shape of the lips. And it's got a little flap on the side. Otherwise, I explained to patients that they can get some 3M micropore tape about 2 centimeters wide, and you take a strip at about 8 centimeters long, fold a flap over about a centimeter at each end, and put it straight over your lips. So you've got a flap either way that you can peel it off. Now, patient herself listened to that Friday, went home, forgot exactly what I was talking about. So her partner decides, well, we don't have any tape. What about this duct tape?
Yep.
She found that a bit threatening, but tried it. I'm like, no.
Oh, what a trooper.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But she came in on for a follow-up the next week, and she's complaining about, you know, look, it was a bit harsh, and I didn't feel really comfortable with it. My lips got a bit torn up. Well, that's because duct tape's meant to stick to everything, like, you know.
Like, what a overkill. Don't use duct tape, people.
Don't use duct tape. No.
We should also preface that please take everything that we're saying as a inquiry. Don't do it without speaking to someone like a GP or someone who knows how to advise whether this is a good idea. If we get emails in saying, I tried it and I choked, then we might get in trouble.
Yeah.
So
like it's
advice only.
For people. It is. People need to start looking at themselves. If they're snoring... Okay, the reason why this is all really important for both sleep and breathing is mouth breathing is the first step towards snoring, which is the first step to sleep apnea, which is the first step to something like a 5-fold increase in stroke risk and a 7-fold increase in heart attack risk. Okay, so think on this.
That's scary.
I am snoring, right? I am in the middle of the night sucking in air against a vacuum. So what do you think that's doing to chest intrathecal pressure, which means the pressure inside your abdomen as you're trying forcibly to breathe in? You are increasing blood pressure and squeezing the bejesus out of your heart. So you're 40 years of age and doing this to yourself. You've got a bit of plaquing in your arteries, or you've got a bit of thinning because your family history has kind of poorer connective tissue. You know, this is really important stuff, people. It might sound humorous, but it's not. It's actually mouth breathing is really a significant threat to your long-term existence, your health and well-being. It's shown to increase your obesity risk. It drives inflammation. It drives brain fog. So you pick a disease, mouth breathing is going to be one step towards getting there. So the other thing that's really interesting,
tape your mouth shut, people.
Because what it stops or helps stop you doing is it stops you breaking your teeth. Because one of the other solutions for it, which is why I thought it was quite prophetic that you were talking about the sore neck in response to this. So we are mouth breathing and we are unable to keep our airway open as we become catatonic and our mouth tone and the musculature around the throat starts to become weaker because as you become more catatonic, your drive goes down. So the tone that your brain holds your muscles at becomes more floppy, right? So there's a couple of solutions that the brain solves. It partially activates your jaw. Okay, so people will wake up, oh, my jaw is so sore, or my teeth are sore. Maybe I need a filling. No, no, there's no fillings there. What you're doing is you are setting and activating your jaw muscles, because try it. When you set your jaw muscles to do so, starts tightening up your throat, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So as you tighten your throat muscles up by setting your jaw, you can actually start to breathe effectively, and it stops you actually choking. Okay? So the other way you do it is literally just tightening all your neck muscles through this upper chest, scalene, SCM sort of area. And what it does is it contracts your upper cervical occipital muscles. And that upper cervical area, as you contract it to hold your airway open, glides the head forward on the neck.
It's essentially mimicking the posture that you're in for 12 to 15 hours a day at a desk.
Which, of course, tightens up.
Sleep will give me relief from my neck posture.
Nah.
No, it ain't.
No. Tightens up all those neck muscles, decreases blood supply to the scalp, will wake you up with a headache. Notwithstanding,
I'm not terribly familiar because I've never seen one, but with people that grind their teeth at night and they go to a dentist to get fitted for a splint so that they grind down the splint and don't grind down their teeth, does the splint have a hole in it to allow you to breathe through that, or is it a closed thing so that you essentially can't breathe through your mouth?
No, it depends. So there's a lot of varieties of different mouth splints. And again, I'm no expert because I'm not a dentist, et cetera, but I've studied these things and worked with different dentists and observed. I actually have a mouth splint myself. It's a silicone one designed by my dentist to stop clenching. And so stress will increase clenching, amongst other things anyway. So some of them are like a double-sided mouth guard that you'd see at footy, but generally... they have two holes right at the lip line so that if you are mouth breathing, you don't choke on it, okay? These things are designed with a thicker bevel at the back, so where your molars would be, to actually unload the jaw clench, because a lot of it becomes, as I'm trying to keep my airway open, I clench, which is really a lot of what the bruxism and the grinding is really about, is I am trying to set my airway to keep it open. However, that forceful pressure straight down starts splitting the teeth and breaking chunks off your molar points. So people have been suffering that. You need to actually have a look at your airway, because it may be that you're compressing because you're not breathing effectively and you're starting to choke in the middle of the night. Might not be that reason, but it's a valid thing to go and look at, because just fixing the teeth might not actually solve your arm. Oh, look, I had it repaired. Great. I've got a splint. Great. Even with the splint, if you don't look at the why of that problem, which is commonly an airway issue, that force still continues to bite down to keep it open.
Which is you're buying time, not buying a solution.
The other interesting thing about bruxism is that commonly the biomed doctors find that it's highly associated, especially in young kids and kids on the spectrum, with parasitic infections. So there's another interesting thing to be thinking about. So get yourself checked. Perhaps see your doctor. Maybe take a sample. Maybe take some Combantrum. You know, Combantrum...
Well, that kind of supports the whole idea of keeping your mouth shut, because if you're breathing through your mouth and you're allowing for that acidic environment in your mouth, which is going to have an onflow impact on your gut microbiome, you kind of don't want that microbiome to be supporting the parasitic infection that you may have. So, hey, comes full circle.
It is, absolutely.
I was wondering how we were going to tie that back into the first couple of minutes of the
So, hey, yeah, well done.
This is the Eric and Scotty show. Yeah. Eric just rounded things off at the end.
So,
but
the other thing that I do to help this whole thing is I use a probiotic that was developed in New Zealand called Bliss K12. And Bliss is
Bliss K12, was it?
K12. So don't confuse that with like vitamin K1 or K2. K12 is their particular name reference for it. And there are different varieties. There's varieties specifically for kids. The one I use is called Daily Defense. Now, this is an oral commensal probiotic. So you suck it and you try and hold it in your mouth as long as you possibly can to try and improve and increase the bacteria, specifically Streptococcus salivarius. And this particular one that he has isolated, or the researcher isolated, releases a biocide in the K12 part of it that kills off competing inappropriate acid-producing bacteria in the mouth and the pharynx. And it decreases ear, nose, throat infections and mouth infections and helps decrease the bacterial load that causes gingivitis and attacks enamel. And
fascinating.
Oh, I think so. It's been really good. I also use
We could almost do a full podcast just on that. That could have ramifications on a whole bunch of things.
So I use that in my pandas patients as well, kids that have
Just as a side thought to throw a spanner in the works, do you see much of a link between mouth breathers and acidic mouth environments and like trigeminal nerve issues and migraines, that sort of thing? Is there any acidity of the teeth priming the trigeminal nervous system that could be a...
Well, there is.
Have you found that looking after the mouth acidity environment has a long-term impact on migraines?
The answer to that one for me is it's really quite difficult to determine based upon my clinical results, because I couldn't say to you, I changed the mouth environment.
Never just doing one thing.
Or I changed the breathing, which changed the mouth and the blood and the, you know, it becomes systemic at that moment in time. Now, someone who's a better clinical researcher than I am would go, right, well, we could design the study to test that and test that. I don't. My patients realistically, in all honesty, pay me to find the right solution, the right result based upon what they present with.
Fix it as fast as possible.
They don't really care whether it was changing the mouth acidity or the blood acidity or the whole systemic acidity. They just want to not be in pain, not feel but whatever it might be. And so while I record keep...
Well, that's the difference between clinical and research.
And I'd love to have the time, to be honest, and the financial resources to be able to just kind of analyze all the data that I've taken from my patients. But to do that is just... it's a pie in the sky sort of dream. Anyone out there with deep pockets who want to kind of gift me $1 million that I can actually start doing some really big research and not have my family go hungry, I'm here.
I think you're lowballing that, mate. Let's make that $10 million. Anyone with a spare $10 million who wants to solve a lot of the world's pain crises, give us a shout.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as I'm co-host, I think I get 50%. Isn't that how it works?
Right. So that means you've got to do 50% of the research, though.
Well.
Quiet there.
Yeah. Well, I think I can delegate some time for that. But
so I came up.
Mate, this has been a. We've had a long and fun talk on this one, but we should start to wrap it up. I think I've got patients that started to knock on the door.
Oh, that's good.
One of the things over the weekend that Brett talked about that I think we should probably have a talk about is that metaboro reflex and the effect on stress. So that's essentially where diaphragm weakness and there's a fatigability of the diaphragm that starts to prime the sympathetic nervous system, and that can create all sorts of bunches of issues. Yeah. But I think that's probably worth a conversation. What do you think?
That was really interesting. I started playing with a power breathe about 15, 16 years ago. So a power breathe is a device that is to train and strengthen your respiratory muscles, okay? And so I always thought when I was using it, what I was really doing was actually strengthening the intercostal muscles more than it really was strengthening the diaphragm. Now, maybe it's the diaphragm, maybe it's the intercostal muscles, because what you're doing is you're literally sucking against a vacuum. Now, I had the most basic version, but that most basic version was the only version that they had when I bought it. And I found it really useful because it stopped me. Back at that stage, I was a endurance cyclist. I was doing, you know, 3-hour races, etc. And what I was finding is that I'd start get cramping in my my back muscles in around kind of the intercostal areas, which realistically could have been the posterior attachments internally of the diaphragm. Who's to know? But when I started using this and practicing breathing through it for several minutes a day, that basically stopped. And so I categorically agree. I just thought we were making the muscle stronger. However, obviously in 15 years, there's a lot of research that's gone into it. And I really did enjoy the neuropriming mechanism between swapping the blood supply and the neural load between the diaphragm and the abdominal muscles that he was talking about as that fatigue level came up. And so no matter what, the take-home message from it is that there is a lot of positive to be done by getting people breathing that way. Now, I will reiterate, healthy breathing for the average person to take them into a parasympathetic state has a longer exhale with a pause at the bottom and a shorter inhalation cycle. When we're breathing with a power breathe device to strengthen the neuromuscular connections, we are not breathing that way. So when you suck in against that valve pressure, you are breathing through your mouth, not through the nose. So it's exactly the opposite to what we've been talking about. So you are literally got the device in your mouth like a snorkel and you go, and you are trying to suck hard against the baffle and then allow the outward flow to just passively occur as it normally would. And so as with weightlifting, what occurs is you start at one strength and then you start to get it
gradually
loaded up and loaded up to make you more efficient at your respiratory cycle. Now, as I say, one very simple way to look at it is as I strengthen the muscle, it becomes more efficient at breathing, whether it's the intercostals, the diaphragm, the scale, it doesn't matter. Because when you do it,
good luck strengthening one without the other.
All of those muscles kick into play. And again, if we think about the scalenes and the SCMs and the traps, which are all involved, they are postural central trunk stabilizers, aren't they? So if we fire them and make them tone more with our breathing, we're going to have some positive effects on our postural positions no matter what. So there's so many cues.
Well, there's a fun study.
Yeah, absolutely.
Doing some posturography, measuring what we can do with someone's center of gravity with just diaphragm strengthening.
Oh, absolutely. It's just an awesome idea.
That's
so
a fun one.
I'm really excited.
PhD right there, mate.
Yep. The downside to it, of course, because like anyone listening, I'd strongly recommend you go out and get a power breathe. They're up to what they're calling the K5. And the K5 is, I think, something like $560 that you buy from Amazon. And you can't, of course, get it from amazon.com.au. It's only the US stores.
Fuckers.
Yeah, well, it drives me mad that all the cool things you can't quite so easily get. But
does not ship to Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't need the most expensive one. However, the most expensive one records the data and has it downloadable to a computer that you can analyze that data. So for someone who you really need, like a high-performance athlete or someone who's seriously unwell that you really need to be able to measure, is this getting better? Is this getting better? Can we see the improvements? Because as much as anything, being able to graph their improvements is essential for the patient's mental well-being, because if you can track that what they're doing is having a positive impact, that keeps refeeding into the psychology of buying in and continuing to do the exercise that you're wanting them to do. I think that's enormously important. But the cheap versions, the basic power breathe, will do exactly the same things.
And that was about, $10 US or something, so substantially more affordable than the $560. But if you've got money to burn and you like gadgets like me, I think I'll probably look at getting one of those. My wife doesn't listen to this.
I'm going to get
another gadget.
One.
She'll crack the shit.
Yeah. I will get it.
Beautiful.
Once I've got some spare money at this moment in time. So, patience, you want to buy mouth tape. If you buy my mouth tape, from the practice, optimallife.com.au. That way I can afford to get the power breathe so I can measure you. Really helpful.
I like it.
Yep.
I was about to say we should start doing tie-ins more often. Let's wind it up, Scotty.
Okay.
Final thoughts. You've usually got a pearl of wisdom at the end of the day.
I've got many pearls. You've got to look at your breathing. If your mouth breathing, your health isn't going to be anything like as good as it could be. It's okay to have a cold, but you shouldn't be continuing to breathe through your mouth more consistently afterwards. Get it looked at. Talk to someone, see a chiropractor, see a dentist, see a GP, see a whomever you trust who can analyze it and look at it and determine if it's working properly.
Mm. If you're snoring, get that shit sorted.
Absolutely.
Mm. Scotty, wise words. Where can people find you, mate?
The practice in Brisbane. We're at 07337100222 or Optimal Life. .com.au is our web address. Email Tawong at optimallife.com.au. Look forward
beautiful.
To seeing you.
And if anyone wants to talk to me as the co-host, the second person who's involved with this podcast who also exists in the universe.
That sent some cats
Eric
amongst the pigeons.
Can be found at... It was so funny when he found, he went bright red. That was worth it. www.brainandbodyhealth.com.au.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Scotty, until next week, you beautiful son of a bitch.
I look forward to it.
All right.
Bye.
Ciao for now.